Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Ken Paxton tried to hide his affair from his wife and voters. It may be his undoing. In September 2018, Attorney General Ken Paxton gathered his staff to make a fateful confession. With 2 months to go before Election Day and holding hands with his wife, State Senator Angela Paxton, the Attorney General reportedly told them about an extramarital affair. He said it was over and swore to recommit to his marriage. But Ken Paxton didn't. The first in a series of consequential choices that the Texas House impeachment managers say set off a chain of alleged crimes and cover-ups that, 5 years later, has culminated in one of the most dramatic moments in Texas political history. The once-in-a-century impeachment trial that starts Tuesday is expected to center on Paxton's infidelity and could air out the sordid details of the staunch Christian conservative's life as he sits just yards away from his wife and her 30 Senate colleagues who will serve as jurors to decide her husband's fate. House impeachment managers argue that Paxton, driven in large part by his desire to continue and conceal the tryst, went to great impeachable and potentially criminal lengths to hide the betrayal from his wife and from the deeply religious voters who have sustained his political career for two decades. Citing nearly 4,000 pages of documents that were released last month, impeachment managers allege that Paxton repeatedly abused his office to help real estate investor Nate Paul's faltering businesses amid an FBI raid, looming bankruptcies, and a litany of related lawsuits. In exchange, Paul allegedly hired Paxton's girlfriend so that she could move to Austin and help Paxton clandestinely meet with her through a secret Uber account that the two men shared. House impeachment managers argue that Paxton had every reason to keep the affair quiet. They point to his apparent burner phones and secret email addresses as evidence that he worried infidelity could destroy his political career. The affair is important because it goes to Ken Paxton's political strength, Representative Ann Johnson, a Houston Democrat who serves on the committee that investigated Paxton, said in May. He knows that with his folks, he is family values. He is a Christian man. And the idea of the exposure of the affair will risk him with his base. Angela Paxton, a McKinney Republican who will be present at the trial but is barred from voting, could not be reached for comment last week. Ken Paxton's attorney, Tony Busby, declined an interview request and did not respond to a list of questions, citing a gag order in place ahead of the Senate trial. "Sounds like you believe your house isn't made of glass and you have a sack full of stones to throw," Busby added in an email. Great, she's back. In an interview with House impeachment managers, Paxton's former top deputies, as well as his former personal aide, said his affair was common knowledge. One deputy recalled that there was a verbal confrontation between the alleged girlfriend and Angela Paxton in a cafe at the Texas Capitol. Others said they had heard rumors or were told directly by Paxton confidants about the affair, but were initially led to believe that it ended in September 2018 after Paxton reportedly confessed and recommitted to his wife. It is unclear when or how Paxton met the woman or first began the affair. Employment records show that she worked as the San Antonio District Director for Senator Donna Campbell, Republican, New Braunfels, from April 2014 until December 2019. The woman moved to Austin around June 2020 for a job with Paul's company, Rental and Employment Records Show. Campbell declined to comment. In a deposition, Paul said that he hired her at Paxton's recommendation. She earned an annual salary of $65,000 and reported directly to Paul. Within days of Paxton's girlfriend starting her new job, Paxton began directing his senior deputies to meet with Paul about his legal problems, a pattern that would continue through the summer. Paul alleged he was the victim of two massive yet separate conspiracies, one involving the police who raided his home and the other involving an alleged couple of Austin businessmen who colluded with a federal judge to steal some of his properties. Agency staff said Paxton routinely overrode them or ignored their concerns about Paul, who they warned was a crook and was misleading Paxton about being unfairly targeted. Rather than heed their many warnings, deputies said, Paxton repeatedly went out of his way to help Paul. Among other moves that alarmed top staff, Paxton allegedly provided Paul with sensitive information about an FBI raid on Paul's businesses and home, told staff not to assist law enforcement investigating Paul, and despite objections from veteran law enforcement officials, hired a young, inexperienced Houston attorney from outside the agency to investigate Paul's adversaries. His obsession with anything related to Nate Paul was so obvious that it just really shocked me, said James Brickman, who served as Deputy Attorney General for Policy and Strategy Initiatives and later reported Paxton to the FBI. Meanwhile, Paxton and Paul continued to share a secret Uber account under the fake name Dave P that they used to clandestinely meet, sometimes after Paxton ditched his security detail. Paxton also used the Uber account to visit the woman's Austin apartment a dozen times beginning in August 2020, according to records made public last month. Around the time, Paxton's personal aide told Houston investigators that he saw the attorney general and the woman at the Omni Barton Creek Resort and Spa, where Paxton was staying at his Austin home was remodeled, allegedly on Paul's dime. No words were said, the aide recalled, of the interaction. Paxton walked out, shook my father's hand, and the lady walked out, didn't acknowledge us or say anything. He later reported the run-in to a senior Paxton advisor who responded, "Great, she's back." By fall 2020, Paxton's deputies had come to believe that he was taking bribes from Paul. On October 1st, seven of them notified Paxton that they had reported him to law enforcement. At 10:39 p.m. the next day, Paxton took his final Uber ride to the woman's Austin apartment. Christian Values. David Brockman, a non-resident scholar at Rice University's Baker Institute for Religion and Public Policy, said Paxton had clear reasons to hide his infidelity. Evidence of an extramarital affair would strike his supporters as hypocritical, he said. He's promoted himself as a conservative Christian, a defender of biblical values, and a guardian of conservative Christian sexual morality, so there's quite a bit of impetus to keep it secret. Since its inception, Paxton's political life has been inextricably tied to the state's conservative Christian voting bloc. He has said he first ran for office at the urging of Kelly Shackelford, whose First Liberty Institute had led the legal charge to infuse Christianity into public life, and Paxton has credited his first election to the House, Texas House, in 2002 as a very simple strategy, get the church out to vote. In his 12 years as a legislator, first as House member and then for the 2 years in the Texas Senate, Paxton was a reliable champion of Christian causes, backing bans on Planned Parenthood sex education materials in public schools and co-authoring a state constitutional amendment that would have barred businesses and individuals from being sued for declining to provide services on religious grounds. Religious conservatives returned the favor in 2014, rallying behind Paxton's attorney general bid, and with the help of far-right West Texas oil money, sending him to statewide office despite initially being discounted as an underdog. As Attorney General, Paxton has continued to elevate conservative Christian legal and political causes. He has packed the agency with similarly minded Christian lawyers, including a former First Liberty Institute attorney who later reported Paxton to the FBI for bribery, and he has turned the office into the tip of the spear in conservative Christianity's broader culture war. Christian conservatives have supported Paxton from day one, and they've done that because he's consistently stood for our principles, our values, and our beliefs, said Jared Woodfill, a longtime leader of ultra-conservative and anti-LGBTQ plus movements in Texas, who is now involved in a political action committee defending Paxton ahead of his Senate trial. Their unwavering support has been beneficial to Paxton, who time and time again have turned to conservative Christians in times of peril. He has invoked biblical figures who've overcome persecution, as he claims his legal and political woes were mere retaliation for his religious views, a message that played well among audiences primed for years of culture war rhetoric. But whereas Paxton's 2015 indictment for securities fraud could be explained by his defenders as the nefarious plotting of an anti-Christian deep state, an affair would strike at the personal responsibility and piety that is emphasized by Paxton's deeply religious base. That much has been clear in recent months as the suspended attorney general's woes have dominated headlines, and some conservative Christians have drawn a direct line between Paxton's infidelity and his fitness for office. It is not my place to say who is Christian or not, Connie Burton, a conservative former Texas senator, wrote on social media last month, but my personal opinion is if a politician confesses Christian values, yet is willing to break those values when it comes to their own spouse, they surely will break a promise to me as a constituent. It's also evident that the impeachment proceedings have taken a political toll since they began in May. Polling released Friday by the Texas Political Project at the University of Texas at Austin show that since April, Paxton's approval rating among Republicans has dropped by 19%. Percentage points to 46%, a two-year low. Paxton's disapproval rating also has more than tripled since December, reading 23% in August. Meanwhile, a plurality of Republicans said they don't know if Paxton took actions that justify removing him from office, compared to 24% who say yes and 32% who say no. Doug Page is among those who say they want Paxton held accountable for any potential misconduct. He first met the attorney general in 2015 when Paxton, weeks removed from his securities fraud indictment, spoke at First Baptist Church of Grapevine, where Page is senior pastor. Paxton didn't address his legal problems at the time, but thanked his fellow Christians for their prayers and, after noting biblical figures who'd faced persecution, urged the Southern Baptist congregation to stand up and speak out against wrongdoing. 8 years later, Page is doing exactly that. If Mr. Paxton is found guilty by the Texas House and Senate, he should be impeached and, if deemed necessary, removed from office, Page said this week. I am for redemption and reconciliation, but our choices have consequences. I'm hopeful that whatever the outcome, Mr. Paxton will surround himself with people who will encourage him to walk with Jesus. Other conservative Christians are more skeptical, believing Paxton is the victim of the same type of deep state witch hunt that they claim was responsible for the impeachment and indictments of former President Donald Trump, and they are willing to look past both men's moral failings if they deliver on conservative Christian priorities, a strain of thought that dates back millennia to figures such as King David and Cyrus the Great, who the Bible says were used by God despite their many sins. If God and Angela Paxton forgive, they say, so too should they. I don't think there are any politicians out there, much less any human, that's perfect or that hasn't made mistakes, Woodfill said. So even assuming that it's true that he made a mistake, which it appears he and his wife have reconciled, I and conservative Christians across the state are looking at what he has done as an elected official and what he has done as Attorney General. TxDOT issues traffic alerts. The Texas Department of Transportation has issued traffic alerts for the following dates and locations. Ector County, September 6th. Pothole patching will be occurring along Business I-20 on the eastbound and westbound lanes, moving northeast from patching mile marker 296 to mile marker 307. Crane County, September 6th. Road repair will be conducted on FM 1787 beginning at mile west of the interstate of FM 1787 and FM 1788 and continue west for 1 mile. Andrews County, September 5th, debris and herbicide operations will be performed on various state-maintained roadways within Winkler County. September 6th and 7th, a lane closure will be required on State Highway 115 beginning 1.5 miles south of the intersection of State Highway 128 and State Highway 115 and continue to the Andrews-Winkler County line 348 to 350. Herbicide operations will continue on various state-maintained roadways. Winkler County, September 8th. There will be right lane closure on State Highway 18 for debris removal beginning 1 mile south of the intersection of State Highway 302 and State Highway 18 and continuing for 2 miles. At mile marker 330 to 332, herbicide operations will continue on various state-maintained roadways. Reeves County, September 5th through 7th, there will be debris removal and sweeping of the road shoulder on Interstate Highway 10 from mile marker 285 to 340 to 328. September 5th through 7th, roadway maintenance will be performed on Business I-20 between approximately West F Street and Hackberry Street in Pecos and continue for approximately 1 mile, mile marker 224 to 225 east and west. Watch for lane closures.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, September 2nd, 2023. Crude jumped 7%, ends week at over $85. Oil prices finish week at highest settlement of the year. Tighter crude supplies and optimism, China, a key crude consumer, will bolster its economy, sent crude prices to their highest settlement of the year. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose all 5 trading days, extending its winning streak to 7 trading days, its longest since January, and crossing the psychologically important $85 trading barrier. Trading opened the week with a modest 27-cent rise, but gained momentum with a $1.06 rise Tuesday and a $2 jump Thursday. Prices added $1.92 or 2.3% to close the week at $85.55 per barrel, and up from $79.83 at last Friday's close. Prices rose 7.2% this week, the biggest weekly gain since March. Natural gas prices rose 2 of 5 trading days, but gained support from high temperatures fueling demand for electricity to power air conditioners. Henry Hub futures on the New York MEX added 4 cents to start the trading week and saw prices bolstered Wednesday by a 13.4 cent jump. Prices then retreated 3 cents Thursday and Friday, with Henry Hub ending the week at $2.765 per MCF, up from $2.540 at last Friday's close. Doug Lawler, Chief Executive Officer at Continental Resources, which entered the Permian Basin 2 years ago with the acquisition of Pioneer Natural Resources' Delaware Basin assets, said commodity prices don't determine the company's plans. Quote, "We are very financially disciplined and don't operate based on price," end quote, he told the Reporter-Telegram this week as senior management visited Midland to be honored at a Midland Wildcat Committee reception. Quote, "We focus on value for the long term. Price has a major role, and we will adjust if necessary. But we are focused on steady continuity in our program," end quote, he said. In his daily newsletter, Craig Earlham, senior market analyst, UK with OANDA, attributed Friday's oil price jump to positive labor market figures released by the federal government. Quote, "Perhaps as the labor market signals interest rates may not rise any further and even fall sooner, which is better for the economic prospects of the economy over the medium term. They'd already been on a good run through, though, and Brent is now trading around its highest level this year, with no shortage of momentum," end quote, Earlham wrote. Big tech is coming for the oil patch's workers. Cost, availability of workers, an issue as companies embark on huge LNG projects. Jose De Hoyos is recruiting in the oil patch. He got his start meeting workers in Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale Basin. This month, you'll find him glad-handing in Odessa. But De Hoyos isn't in the Permian to hire engineers for gas rigs or roughnecks to join drilling crews. Instead, the founder of the cryptocurrency consulting firm, LFG Mining, is pitching a career pivot to data centers, the unsexy backbone of all things tech. He touts better pay and working conditions and a career with big growth potential. Quote, "We are going to cross train them and make them proficient in the Bitcoin mining and traditional data center setup," end quote, said De Hoyos, who is seeking to hire as many as 12 people for operations in Pecos and Odessa. While it's hardly new for energy workers to migrate toward tech, President Joe Biden infamously encouraged coal miners to, quote, "learn to code," end quote, the current push from De Hoyos and other recruiters to poach them comes at a precarious moment for the gas industry. Developers are racing to build a series of massive projects in Texas to liquefy and export U.S. gas to make up for reduced Russian pipeline flows to Europe in the wake of the Ukraine invasion. These companies need every skilled worker they can get. Executives and analysts warn the increasing competition from tech threatens to drive up project costs and slow construction as the clock is ticking to bring the fuel to the global market. The recruiters targeting the Texas energy industry have been a nightmare for Paul Mardson, president of the energy division at the engineering and construction company Bechtel. He's losing workers to Elon Musk's SpaceX and the technology titans that moved to Lone Star State amid the pandemic migration. Quote, "Big tech has a lot of buying power," end quote, he said in an interview. Quote, "The mission is to go hard, go fast, and that's been a disruptor for the labor market. That's not something we've had to compete with in the past," end quote. The U.S. is set to become the world's largest LNG exporter this year, but to keep up with demand, it'll need to get new export terminals online quickly. NextDecade Corp will need as many as 5,000 workers on site as it starts construction of an $18.4 billion LNG export plant in Brownsville, dubbed Rio Grande LNG. Golden Pass, a joint venture between Qatar Energy and ExxonMobil Corp, needs as many as 7,700 workers near the Louisiana border before it opens next year. In nearby Port Arthur, Sempra's project needs as many as 1,500 workers a month over the 4.5 years it will take to construct. The cost and availability of workers is a huge issue for companies as they embark on these massive LNG projects, according to Mike Weber, managing partner at the firm Weber Research and Advisory, an energy industry consultant. Quote, not only will the existing labor pool get stretched, that pool is getting more expensive, end quote. Along the U.S., Gulf of Mexico coast, Weber said in an email. Quote, there's a hidden cost of training so many new people and ramping their skill level to the point it can hit the quality standards, end quote. Golden Pass declined to comment on the risk of delays or cost overruns at its project. While NextDecade didn't directly address the question, Sempra said it was seeing a tighter labor market and cost increases, but that it seeks to keep those to a minimum by locking in prices in advance. The biggest U.S. LNG producer, Cheniere Energy, Inc., is expanding one of its export terminals in Corpus Christi. The company says costs on that project might be about 10% higher because of the, quote, inflationary environment, end quote. Executives have also said that industry-wide, project costs are up as much as 40% at some sites because of rising labor and construction expenses and higher interest rates. Sarah Oliveira, who works as a recruiter for the firm AirSwift Global, says competition from tech companies has made it increasingly difficult to fill LNG roles in Texas. For every 5 potential engineering candidates that she's vetting for the LNG-specific roles, she says at least 1 or 2 of them are also interviewing with Tesla, and Tesla often offers higher pay. Quote, money can be the deal breaker, end quote, she said. Of course, the labor shortage in Texas isn't wholly unique. Across the U.S., companies and industries from semiconductors to meat packers are struggling to find workers amid historically low unemployment. Trade workers are particularly hard to find, with the U.S. short some 200,000 electricians, according to industry estimates. Quote, the trades are in a desperate need, end quote, said Helene Webster, executive director of the independent electrical contractor, Texas Gulf Coast. Specialized roles for major infrastructure projects like project managers who make sure everything is running smoothly and on time can be particularly difficult to fill. Quote, we say it's like finding hen's teeth, end quote. Damon Hill, president of growth and development for projects at Wood Group, a consultant on major infrastructure works. The increased competition for Texas workers also reflects how the economy transformed over recent decades. While the state remains the U.S. energy hub, the industry is a smaller part of the overall Texas economy than it was in years past. The number of oil and gas workers in Texas has fallen 20% since 2018, according to data from the Texas Workforce Commission, while jobs tied to computing infrastructure, data processing, and other related work grew by almost 40% over the same period. Jeff Reed, 34, left a job doing business development for Mesa Natural Gas Solutions, a company supplying natural gas generators to shale operations, in February to join Sunbelt Solomon. His new employer provides electrical equipment such as transformers to data centers and other businesses. Quote, a lot of my friends in the oil and gas industry either make the moves themselves or ask me how to get away, end quote, Reed said. Quote, they have seen the energy cycles and the volatility of the oil and gas industry. It gets a little scary when things slow down, end quote. Reed said there's a surprising amount of overlap in skills needed for either field. Quote, there are a lot of parallels, end quote, Reed said. Quote, plugging in computers and troubleshooting, hooking up electrical components, tightening pipes, set the equipment on site, end quote. To Hoyos, whose company does repairs, training, and operations for crypto mining facilities, said one of his favorite hunting grounds for recruits is gas stations. He stalks out the parking lot looking for telltale signs of energy workers, specifically the large ice chests in the back of their vehicles that provide cool drinks in the sweltering West Texas oil patch. He always makes sure to mention that data centers are air-conditioned.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.